In today's quest, we learn that it's good to be the king. This is the Quest for Power. Welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are Scott and Michael, and once again, we are your hosts and lords of history, particularly of the European area. So, as we kind of mentioned last time, if you had stuck with us, is that we are no longer covering the Ostrogoths. Why do you ask? Because we ran out of kings. That's it. That's the answer. And queens.
It's kind of a problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. Now we have a new dynasty and a new set of kings and queens with more difficult to pronounce names. And so we will be transferring over to the Merovingian dynasty.
Merovingian. I think it's called.
See?
I could be wrong. I am horrible at translations, as I learned. Like, I'll say something on our podcast, and I'll listen to another podcast say that exact, like, person's name completely different. I'm like, whoops, we blew that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember who it was, but some of them I was like, oh, I was way out of, not even close.
Or they are.
Yeah.
We're taking our best stabs, and if we, yeah. So, Merovingian, it sounds right, So yeah. Let's, before we get into anything too major, because I have no clue, who on earth are these guys exactly?
So the Merovingians, we'll get into it more, but they are they are one of the most underrated, like, families that in this Dark Ages Europe, this beginning of Europe, there is a ton of drama that happens between this family. There's brothers killing brothers because for some reason in their brilliant wisdom, they think, when I die, I should break up all of my kingdoms, you know, equally for my children. Obviously, you'd think, oh, that would sound nice, you know, right? But then no, the children keep trying to kill each other to rebuild the kingdom that you just gave them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. On the bright side, you're not playing any favorites.
No, you're not.
All things equal.
I'm sure they I'm sure they still somehow play favorites, and
you get the better
land. It is just a wild ride through the Merovingians. So they're a ton of fun. They are what, when I was thinking of this podcast, is what it was all about.
There you go. So now y'all have the I guess the namesake.
We are in the real era now.
Yeah, this is about the drama and not as much about the destruction of Rome.
Yes, correct. Yep.
So, but like any other, good kingdom, either filled with drama or ones that take from Rome, we have to expand our borders, right? So, we need to expand our borders, and you can join us. And if you're looking for some extra content, so we've created a Patreon for you to join our kingdom, expand our borders, and you can become a lord, lady, or noble in your own right in our wonderful community that we are creating. So you might be asking, what on earth does that mean? As an honored member of our court, you get a shout out, exclusive access to side quest episodes, and also with an entrance to our kingdom, which some people of the modern day may also call it Discord.
Yeah, Discord. That's one way to put it. Discord is great, especially if you're like me and everyone in your life is really tired about you talking about obscure events that happened over 1,000 years ago. They're tired of hearing, yes, this king, he tried to sell an entire kingdom. They're just exhausted from it. Or this one king had to be told that, no, you can't marry your stepmother. That's not allowed. Not everyone finds that great. So Discord's going to be good to find like-minded people, hopefully, and we can build this kingdom of people who enjoy history for the sake of the drama and, you know, not just get in the weeds of certain things, but just talk about and have a good time with it.
Yep. And unlike the Merovingians, we promise not to divide up the servers equally amongst all of you.
Yes. And we do not encourage like backstabbing. I don't think that's really encouraged in our kingdom. So just try to keep that to a minimum. We'll come down on that.
So once again, come check out our Patreon. We hope to see you in the Discord. And help to engage and create some new history, but also be able to have a greater and deeper conversation about the topics that we talk about here.
Yes. And if that is not enough for you and you're like, I need more power, because, you know, that's why you listen to this show. You want to gain that extra power needed. You want to conquer your rivals. We've created even extra royal titles for you. It's like an RPG is what was in my mind when I was creating it. You can be a duke, a duchess, a jarl, a king, queen, a sovereign, if you desire, and you get extra things with that. You can commission your own episode on one of them. You can listen to episodes a week early if you're like, I need to know what happens next. And for some reason, you're like, I cannot wait. We have a way for you to be able to do that. So, and if, you know, you're like, this Patreon thing, just not my thing, but I still want to like say good job to you people. You can give us a one-off donation at questforpower.captivate.fm/support and choose how much you like to donate. I'll just put this in the below for you. Again, this is something extra. You don't really need to, you don't feel the need to contribute it if you don't want to. We are just trying to find ways to cover our costs for this, because it is quite an adventure to try and cover all the kings, try and even just map it out, how we're going to cover all of the crazy stories and the dynasties that we're going to go through. We have one episode already out for you, and that's about sieges, and I think we had a good time with that, Scott, right?
Yeah, it was, again, a topic of my choosing, or yes, at least my poking and prodding, my suggestion. So I thought it was pretty cool, because I know at least a thing or two about sieges, siege tactics, but it was wonderful to be able to dive in and talk about not just the some of the broad tactics, but also the evolution of tactics, because after all, warfare is kind of like a game of cat and mouse. So it was a pleasure to kind of go over the evolution of siege warfare as well.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to actually get in the weeds and stuff, because like here we just go through a brisk pace. Like, you can't go like in depth and sit around in a siege for an hour. But in that one, we literally did.
Yeah.
So with all of that nonsense and self-promotion out of the way, Scott, what have you been up to lately?
A whole lot of Civilization VI. No joke.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds interesting.
It's been a while. And you, once you catch the bug, you can't stop, because games take like, I don't know, probably 10 hours.
Do you play all in one go? At least like, oh my goodness.
I'm playing online with a group of friends. So we do break it up, but.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's fun. And it's a wonderful kind of way to have that. That strategy brain ticking.
Mm-hmm. But those games are fun.
It's very nice. It's very slow and methodical. It's one of those things where you get that satisfaction of kind of like slowly strangling your enemies, like resources and such. Like, you get to see the light of their eyes slowly die away.
Yes. Have you used any tactics you've learned from here yet?
I can't say that mainly because I dirtle really hard in strategy games.
Dirtle?
Yeah. So basically sit back and just don't be aggressive, maintain as little of a military as possible, and just to you accumulate resources and use that to better your long game, right?
Oh, that's interesting. I usually build up my military, but I don't attack, and then I start building up my resources, and then if you attack me, I just come at you with everything I got. I will burn my kingdom to the ground to take you out.
Yeah. Well, the thing about in Civilization is that military costs money to maintain. So there is an inherent cost. In addition to any game, even like I do this in Age of Empires as well, but there is opportunity cost, right? Like you could be producing soldiers or you could be producing buildings that help you produce things better in the future.
Yeah, that's the good of any like board game or strategy game. There are so many games like that that, you know, everything has an opportunity cost and you're sitting there trying to be really crunchy and be like, I don't want to make this decision.
Yeah, so I have a tendency to maintain the bare minimum and then I will, if I get attacked and stuff, then I use my enhanced abilities to ramp into a hard military and enact sweet vengeance. See that.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Yeah, because I mean, resources are win wars. I mean, look at the Ostrogoths that we just dealt with.
As long as you can defend them. Yeah, you don't want Rome just walking through your territory. Yeah. Just undefended or
if you have the resources, you're going to win. I mean, World War II was won solely because of we just had way more resources than the Axis powers did.
Ain't that the truth?
Anyway, let's talk about our sources. One thing to note about the sources is most of the kings in the Merovingian line, except for this one, are Christian. Or they become Christian. And Childeric is not Christian. He will never be Christian. So as a result, our sources think that he's going to be burning in hell the whole time when they're thinking about him, you know, that because he never accepted the one true God and Jesus Christ into his life. And so with that, we have we had him already, but we have Saint Gregory of Tours. We went through him all the way back in episode 9 with Alaric II's episode. He is the main source of this period. But we would be absolutely delusional if we labeled him as accurate because he is writing for the Merovingians.
Okay. Yeah. Well, small bias.
Just a little bit. You know, he kind of wants to keep his head on his shoulders. So
reasonable. Yeah. I would write some pretty bogus stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta keep it kind of interesting, so, or kind of, you know, good with the family.
Yeah,
because the Merovingians, as you're going to learn, they have no qualms about killing people that displease them, even if it's their relatives.
Boy,
we also have the Chronicle of Fredegar, which is a 7th century Frankish chronicle that was probably written in Burgundy. We don't really know who the author was. The name Fredegar was attributed way later in the 16th century. So we have that one also to go off of. And they're one of the few sources when we get past 591, when St. Gregory of Tours, his work finishes. They kind of pick up and give us sparse information into the later kings. All right, with that out of the way, on to the main event, or the main quest, if you will. Welcome to the court of Childeric of House Merovingian, first of his name, King of the Salian Franks. So before we get to Childeric's story, let's explore a little bit about this mysterious Merovingian dynasty and its background. The first Frankish king mentioned by Greg is Clodio, who was a man of high birth and lived in a castle in Duisburg. And this is probably somewhere near modern day Brussels in Belgium, if you're looking on a map. And today we would more call him like a tribal chief than a king. But that's a lot of our kings, to be honest, that they're more tribal chiefs than anything in the beginning anyway. He was distinguished by his long, luscious hair that would later become the symbol of Frankish royalty. Only the royals would be able to have the long hair, and they actually referred by their rivals as the long-haired kings.
Wow. Maybe they were born with it.
And it was common, so if you were to dispose of one of the long-haired kings, you would actually cut their hair, and that signified they were unable to rule.
Wow. You know, not to say we can't just grow it back.
I mean, yeah. I think that's a little bit better than getting your head chopped off. I'd be like, yeah, fine, just take my hair. I guess I'll wear short hair.
I guess it's a good thing that most kingdoms tend to be hereditary because, boy, if male pattern baldness struck in.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. I bet that the baldness was like actually a consideration in like who you could court.
I wonder. Oh my god, that's funny. I never even thought of that.
Yeah. Well, I just thought, or they just have like, you know, the really like they have a bald spot on the top and the sides of their hair are just really long.
Yeah. Yeah, they're always wearing a helmet for some reason.
Yeah. Wigs. Yeah, I don't know. It just struck me as kind of a funny thing.
Yeah. Wow, I never thought of that. That's great. Well, one day, Clodio's wife was bathing. She was finally enjoying some time to herself, and then suddenly she encountered a beast of Neptune, which resembles a Quinitar. 9 months later, she gave birth to a baby boy and named him Mirovec. Scott, have you ever heard of a Quinitar? This monster of Neptune before?
No, but what is it? Something with like five heads or something?
It's close. Come on, Tar? Minotaur?
Yeah, but like...
Quinotar? Bull with five horns.
I mean, that was my second guess, too. That doesn't sound fantastic enough. Five heads sounds better.
It was this bull that lived in the water, and this monster is only in the Chronicle of Fredegar. It is nowhere else. It is not in Greek mythology. It's not in Roman mythology. It is nowhere. It is solely in this chronicle.
Wonderful.
So this had to be a bastardized version of pagan, like the Frankish pagan mythology. There's no way
they took bits like, and pieces
where did
from
you
Rome
come up
and...
with this.
Yeah, you know, culture evolves from place and time.
Yeah, and Fredegar is very careful to never explicitly say that Mirovec is the that this horrible monster is the father of Mirovec, but it very heavily implies it, which gives the Merovingian dynasty a supernatural origin, and this is very common among Germanic kings.
Damn it, Zeus.
When we cover the Anglo-Saxons in England, many of them are going to claim they descend from Woden or like Odin. And that's how that is their legitimacy. So.
All right. Well,
that
is,
that's what we have. Gregory probably knew of these claims and thought of them as pagan nonsense because he didn't really mention this, but it was right around here in his histories that he just goes on a rant against idolatry. So
yeah.
just out of nowhere. So I'm guessing so he probably knew of it, just didn't want to mention it. So after Clodio, Mirovec became king, and that officially designated as founding of the Merovingian dynasty. A lot of sources like to say later that Clovis did, and that's because Clovis was like the Alaric. He is the Geyseric of the time.
We've already had our run-ins.
We have a king before him.
We've already had our run-in with him. Yeah. So.
Yes, we have. Yep. So Childeric's reign is going to be a bit mythical, a bit misjointed mess. There's not really great ways of telling the story. His just not great documentation of Childeric. We know he was born around 436. And I know, Scott, this is going to be shocking to you. We don't know anything about his childhood.
Gasp.
at this time, there was a lot of conflict between the Franks and Rome. They had their little skirmishes of not too much consequence, but, you know, they had their fights. So he probably grew up in a warrior society, probably during war with the Romans and in military. And according to Gregory, Fredegar's reign wasn't off to the best start. And what I mean by that is apparently it's not a really good idea to do nothing all day but seduce the daughters of your subjects.
Good to be the king.
So, kings have been known to, you know, they have their mistresses. But Childeric despoiled so many daughters that his subjects actually ran him out of the kingdom.
I hope it was worth it.
I want to know what their breaking point was. What number was it? We're like, okay, that's too much.
Well, I feel like it's more like the gossip, right? Or like the you kind of begin reading the winds and you're like, you know, you're probably not going to broadcast this, like, if you've had the misfortune of the run-in with the king. And you probably, after a while, begin picking up on this on the other people in town. And then it kind of becomes like, hey, friend, like, you know, did you hear? Or, like, things like that. And all of a sudden, you begin putting the pieces together and all the puzzle pieces align. And you're just like, hot, this is like, this son of a bitch, this guy has been just, like, messing around with everybody. And yeah, it doesn't take too long for the cat to get out of the bag after that point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the nobility. I'm pretty sure they're not referring to.
Yeah, no, I meant nobility. But that's what I mean is like that you piss off enough powerful people, and if all of these powerful people all of a sudden kind of read the winds, then all of a sudden it just kind of becomes, oh my god, this guy. we got to get him out of here.
All of a sudden, all their daughters just start having little bumps on their belly, and they they don't know
the
why.
The birth rate has skyrocketed. No, I felt like it. Well, maybe it did take that long, but
before running away, Childeric charged one of. He had a very loyal follower named Wiomad, and he asked him to stay behind and just, can you calm them down, please, with your honeyed words? He must have been a really good salesman. Who knows? I just want to know how much money he gave him to, like, bribe these people. Or did he, like, because it was honeyed words, so, like, did he just give him a ton of mead to give to them and get them just so drunk that they agree to let Childeric back?
Oh, so they're actually letting him back. I figured it was. Well, I figured the damage was done, and it was, hey,
we just let him go,
because I can't imagine that. Like there, you can't reasonably argue that. Hey, you should let this guy back in. You know, like I feel like it's, hey, you should not hunt him down to the ends of the earth and kill him. Let him go off and be in exile.
yeah. Well. The story goes that Childeric and Wiomad split a coin in half, and they each took a part of this coin. Wiomad was to send Childeric his half of the coin once it was safe for him to return.
That's pretty cool.
So, Childeric fled to the kingdom of Thuringia, which is probably Central Europe. I'm guessing it's... They don't know exactly where this is, but it's probably somewhere within Germany. And he was at the pleasure of King Business for 8 years about. So the king housed him and was, you know, gave him a place to stay while he was not allowed in his own kingdom. And in the meantime, the Salian Franks elected Roman general Aegeus as a king in their stead. So they're basically like, okay, our own kings clearly can't do what there is. You Roman, please, you know, like make us civilized, I guess. I don't know. Right. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd outside choice.
But
no one wants the job, I guess.
I mean, I mean, I wouldn't want to be king in this era. What did we talk about last episode? Like, all the kings besides one of the Ostrogoths met their demise.
I'm not sure if I'd want to be cousin either, though.
No, I wouldn't want to do that either. I just wouldn't want to be born in this period. The history, as much as I love history, the past was the worst.
Yeah.
There's no good old days. It was always bad.
Yeah.
But his boy Wiomat stayed true to his promise, and like the ultimate wingman, he managed to roll a nat 20 on persuasion. So he not only got the Franks to turn on the person that they wanted, King Aegeus, but they got them. He got them to forgive Childeric and actually demand that he return to the throne.
What's wrong with these people? Like, it sounds like he didn't do anything. I mean, apart from Diddle, he hasn't done anything.
No. I don't understand. I wonder what Aegeus did, if he was just being all Roman about things and it kind of ticked him off. Like,
yeah. I honestly, I could see him being infuriating, insufferable.
Yeah. So with his work done, Wiomad sent Childeric the other half of the coin, as promised, and Childeric came back to the kingdom with open arms.
Impressive. Honestly, it's impressive how loyal Wiomad is, because the other people could have just paid him to send the coin back. And then he just comes back, and then all the nobles that now are grandparents then murder their king.
We've had a lot of those, like, a lot of our kings, some of the, like, the more powerful ones, they have, like, this really good sidekick, like, Justinian has Belisarius. And then we had Odoacer, who had, I forgot the person's name, where he said to Theodoric, that's right, I surrender to you. I'm your most loyal subject. And then turn around and kill all of his men. I can't remember. Killing. Tufa.
Yeah.
Tufa. There we go.
So, yeah, it's impressive how you can have just one loyal confidant.
So after Childeric sat down on his throne, you know, got used to it again, he was approached by someone who he already knew. He was approached by Basina, who was the queen of the Thuringians, who was the very wife of his old host of 8 years. And she basically went to him and said, "I'm so tired of my husband. You're pretty hot. You're bold. You're powerful. I like you. I want to be your queen." And he went, "You know what? You're right. I am hot, bold, and powerful. Screw business. And yeah, he helped me out, but you should be my queen." Thoughts?
All of a sudden, the fact that he could get around with all the daughters of the nobles in the kingdom, all of a sudden kind of makes sense.
It kind of does.
That or business, getting down to business, was a very, like, you know, like, you're just like old, fat, undesirable, you know, man, King. Right?
Yeah. He had to put all of his points, if he was in an RPG, into charisma. I bet.
Yeah. One sexy boy.
So this whole story, this exile story, it's a fun story, but it appears it's just that, it's a story. Most scholars call BS on this, but there is probably a small nugget of truth in this grand fairy tale. I like it. I want to say it happened because it's fun. It is very over the top. Like, I could see this easily in a TV show being done. In like almost a comedy of like the medieval times. You could actually see this one.
Yeah, it's pretty like overly dramatized.
Yeah.
It's like a fanfic about yourself.
It kind of, yeah, it kind of is. It's definitely, well, let's be honest, a lot of history is fan fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Is I mean, it,
you're saying the Trojan War
as
is
much
not
as
real?
What I want to, as much as what I want to say, like the stuff that we talk about is all it really happened. I'm gonna go with the 80-20 rule. Everything we talk about is probably 80% true, and 20% of it's made up. And sometimes it probably switches here and there. It flips.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you talk about old stuff.
Exactly. So what probably happened is the election of the Roman general Aegeus as king may have suggested like a friendship between the Franks and the dying Western Roman Empire, even as late as the 460s, showing like they were still like continued like together. The Franks and the Romans actually worked together quite a bit. Hmm. They did fight against each other, but they also did work with each other. It was a weird, it's this weird,
it's like the Visigoths,
just, yeah, it's this very bizarre way of life with the alliance. Like you're allied with them, yet they're your enemy is what it seems like. There's a lot of going on right now.
Can respect it.
So Aegeus had been appointed Magister Militum, Master of Soldiers, of Gaul by the Western Roman Emperor Majorian. And so this also could be a story that represented the dwindling might of Rome and Gaul. So maybe under King Childeric, the Franks were either subjected to or they were allies of Rome. But there's no concrete evidence of any of this. The only thing we know is that Childeric had some sort of relationship with Aegeus that was most likely either an alliance of sort or they were mortal enemies. And the sources say it both ways for some reason. Anyway, Aegeus died in 465, either during an ambush or while in prison. So things didn't end up great for him anyway. And it sounds like from Rome, not from the Franks, that happened. Mm. So in book two of his History of the Franks, Gregory of Tours notes that sometimes after Aegeus's death, a group of Saxons, you know, they're a Germanic group, under a certain Odoacer, penetrated Gaul as far as Angiers. And if it's Angiers today, it's a city that's northwest of France that is off the Loire River. The Franks once again appear to act as allies of Rome by fighting off the Saxons and actually capturing some of the islands that the Saxons held. And then later, Gregory notes that Childeric entered an alliance with an Odoacer against the Alans, which were another Germanic tribe, and to drive them out of Italy.
Hmm.
So it is unclear whether it's the same Odoacer that led the Saxons who he was fighting against. If he was fighting against Odoacer and then he was allied with Odoacer. And it's also, you know, Odoacer might be going off in your head because it's a king we covered.
Yep, yep.
And it's very unclear if this is the same Odoacer who overthrew the Western Roman Empire. He was of Rugian and Syrian descent. So what would he be doing leading the Saxons?
Yeah.
It would have me baffled, but weirder shit has happened, you know, in history. So
mm-hmm.
There's that whole confusing mess with Odoacer. What do you think happened in this conglomerate of...
It's probably a different guy. I don't know how many Odoacers are out there, but...
I think the first one may have been different, but I think the second one could have been because it was in Italy.
Yeah no, that sounds
right. So that
right.
would make sense.
I don't recall Odoacer as much, apart from being all over the placer.
Yeah, he really was.
I just
was.
Remember that stupid joke I made, and that's all I remember about him.
The biggest thing I remember is that he overthrew Rome, but then was sliced up at a banquet.
Oh, yes, that's the man.
So, and that he had got a bad rap in history is what it sounds like, that, you know, the victor, Theodoric, got to write crap about him because he all won. in The Life of Saint Genevieve, written in the 6th century, this claims that Childeric laid siege at some point to Paris over a period of 10 years.
It's a long time.
10 years, Scott. We just went over in our sieges episode how brutal it would be for 1 year.
Yeah.
Much or less 10 years.
It's a long time. I mean, at that point, you'd set up your own houses and farms at that point, and you...
Yeah, that's... This one historian named James, he thinks the siege may have been nothing more than Childeric's soldiers occupying the land.
Yeah, because like it's not really as much of a siege if you're not really cutting them off, right?
But it sounds like he was cutting them off, because what else would you call that?
But like, what about supplies?
If you're the king... But if you that's what I was about to say. If you're the King Childeric, would you allow them to get supplies? Because it's Romans that are in Paris, not your people. And if you're in a tiff with them, wouldn't you be cutting off their supplies and taking it for yourself?
I mean, it's the ideal, but like, how can a defender hold out for 10 years if you're taking all their supplies or cutting them off?
Maybe they had that much storage.
There's 10 years?
Certain ones, it's ridiculous. I know that.
How do you preserve food for that long?
I don't know. I have zero idea.
One thing we didn't cover in the siege was food preservation.
No, we did not cover that. Maybe with
yeah,
that could be an entire episode itself.
Because yeah, what people ate back then. Future episode.
What people ate back then. But
yeah, it just kind of blows. I don't think that someone or that a place could survive for 10 years off of rations, right? I don't know what could last for 10 years without getting new stuff shipped in.
Yeah, unless they were somehow getting stuff shipped in like along a riverway.
Yeah, yeah, like we had with not Ravenna, was it? No. The one that had like kind of like the odd like bog land kind of like river delta.
That's Ravenna. Okay. Yep, Ravenna. Very much like Ravenna. Correct.
So maybe they had a similar river system, like where it was just too difficult to stop.
Yeah, that could be it. It's just kind of interesting. But regardless, what this says is it shows how much the Salian Franks grew during Childeric's reign. They had a very small area when he started out in the northwestern part of France, and he really grew like a pretty sizable kingdom all the way down to Paris, it's basically to show that he actually gained some stuff or gained some land. And then Childeric died around 481. He left his kingdom to Clovis. Much like his reign, we don't know how he died.
Mm.
So that's the mystery.
Died of an STD.
Of Childeric. Yeah, I can see that. Can easily see that.
Yeah.
So that's the mysteries of Childeric. Are you ready to rate
him? Yep, let's do it. Royal power.
All right, so how long do you think his reign was?
And that sounds like, well, depends if you count the time that he may or may not have been away. So I think he's like a 10-year king, right?
Well, it says that he ruled from 458 to 481, so around 23 years.
Okay. See, I remember the 7-year supposed refuge.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, he probably lasted a little longer. He's not.
I wonder if that 7 years is in that number.
It probably is. Because it's just speculation, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's most of his reign is speculation. There's really not that much. The only thing I can say is that he expanded the Salian Franks kingdom. Like, we know that for sure, because when Clovis took it over, it was actually pretty sizable when he got it. And then he may have fought alongside Rome, or was like a foederati of Rome. So like, what we talked about with the Visigoths, when they're like, I don't know, soldiers of Rome, but they're their own people type deal.
Yep. They get all the perks of fighting for Rome, but without actually being Roman. Wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. And then he besieged Paris for 10 years, it is said, which is quite impressive. The big negatives are we don't know what happened. Like, I can't tell you what happened during his reign. It's just a lot of it is the fog of history.
Yeah. So using that, it sounds like it's mostly positive. Not a ton negative to say about him. It sounds like he probably held the line and maybe expanded a little bit. So I'm willing to put him at like a 6 or 7, maybe. He's got to be above a 5 because it sounds like he's in the positive.
That's true. I was thinking of 5, but yeah, you're right. We'll do. Yes, yeah, I think 7. He puts his son. His son's gonna gain a 10, and I think he deserves a 7.
Yeah, I mean,
because he sets him up very well.
Yeah, it sounds like he, you know, managed things reasonably well. It sounds stable, surprisingly. Despite the legend around him, everything sounds stable.
Yeah, so he's like Gundaric to Geyseric. Remember where Gundaric kind of built the kingdom and Geyseric just took it and it blew it up.
Yeah.
Type deal. He's that kind of character. All right, so.
So I'm willing to splurge on the 7 here too. That was my first instinct. So a 7 and 7 for 14. All right, infamy.
Well, he literally lost his job and almost his life because he kept seducing so many daughters of his nobles.
Allegedly, but yes.
Allegedly. I'm going to go with that it happened because you got to give him points for something, well, and I love that story.
Well, we do give points based on legends around them, too. So
that
you
is
can
true.
Take
we
it well, however you want to take it, but... there's a legend. Because
it is what they're infamous for. So, yeah. You know, the legend's there. That's pretty good. That's a solid.
Like an 8 or
I wonder
9.
If that was to, like, give, yeah.
I'll give him an 8 because I feel like there's got to be room for more.
Yeah, I'll give him an 8. I agree.
All right.
Because it's got to be high, but not a 10 or a
yeah, math or is 9. Easy. 8 and 8 for 16. Religious passion.
All right, so he was a pagan, but it seemed like he got along with the Catholic Gallo-Romans under his domain. He didn't really appear gung-ho for Jupiter, so...
No.
I gotta go 0.
Or 1 for his religious origins, apparently. His mythological origins.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No.
That was like his... That, yeah, nah.
I'm joking.
Yeah, not again, what history tells us, I don't see any passion behind it.
I bet his mom would beg to differ. oh god, that.
No, it's so good. You gotta keep that. We are explicit for a reason. That's terrible, but fantastic.
All right.
Oh, wow. You can tell how late it is. All right.
Anyways, stability.
So his kingdom existed, and besides one little minor incident of seducing all the daughters of his nobles, there was no recorded armed rebellions. He expanded his kingdom. Didn't seem like he had intruders destabilizing things, like we were constantly dealing with in the Ostrogoths.
So, and again, because we're kind of meddling with truth and fiction here, so my first instinct is a 5, but I want to downgrade to a 4 on the off chance that the Roman general was in fact like holding more of a significant level of position in the government.
I was gonna downgrade it to 3 just because of the times as well. I like this time in Europe is so chaotic.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine it's that stable yet. Like, we're not in, like, stable kingdoms. You're not even close yet.
Fair enough. It just sounds, yeah, again, it's one of those, like, because of the way we frame, I'm sure, is that it sounds like he's a stabilizing factor or a significant one.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. So a 4 and a 3 for 7. All right. Royal demise or lack thereof.
Zero. Got nothing.
Yeah, he went peacefully in his sleep.
I highly doubt that, but
he went peacefully into dysentery.
Let's put it this way. His son was age 15 when he finally died. That'll do it. Teenager, I guess.
Yeah. Smells like teen spirit. All right. All right. Legacy.
Obviously, Childeric had to have sired many children that we were not told about, given that he seduced so many daughters to be exiled out of his own kingdom.
Allegedly.
And they didn't exactly have contraception back then.
Yeah.
So we have that. We know of at least four children that are named in his records. We have Clovis the First, who is his only son that we know of, and who is also the child of his wife, Queen Basina. So he's pretty legitimate, he being Clovis. He has a daughter named Autofleda. Do you remember her? Is that name spark a bell?
Just sounds like one of the, queens who got married over, but like in a half-ass horrible alliance with the Visigoths, I think.
No, actually, she married the Theodoric the Great
in
493 and became queen of the Ostrogoths.
Oh. Boy, I really don't recall that. Queen? Maybe I was thinking of Amalasuntha. She was in the Ostrogoths.
It's her daughter.
Oh, okay.
Her daughter.
Because, yeah, I was like, when I think of Queen of Ostrogoths, I think of Amalasuntha, not...
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, I mean, she was a blip, and because they didn't have that much information.
Mala Sintha got a whole episode.
She did. Yeah. He had two daughters mentioned by Gregory, whose names are. You're gonna say those.
All right. Whoa, that is a lot of letters. Lantachildis and Albofladis. Albofladi.
Yep.
I'm sure there's
those two.
And Albofladi. I'm sure there's a few different ways to say those.
Since it's IS, it's gotta be E at the end.
That's my assumption. Yeah. I read it like with basic English at first, and then I think about actually maybe the origin of the words.
So maybe Lanta Childi in Albofladi.
Yeah. That sounds much better.
All right, we'll go with that. I think we got
there. You go. I gave people the original spelling through my horrible pronunciation.
In 1653, they discovered the grave of King Childeric near Tournai, which is in modern Belgium. It's a pretty amazing find. It was loaded with weapons, jewelry, tons of Roman coins.
It's pretty cool, but they didn't divert a river for it, so...
No, they did not. Particularly noticeable, there were a few gold bees or cicadias, and they looked like they had been used to decorate some sort of cloak. These Childeric bees were adopted also as heraldic symbols by Napoleon.
Oh, that's cool.
To replace the monarchy Capetian fleur-de-lis. Fleur-de-lis, you're correct. Wow, and that's like the scouts thing I should know.
Yeah,
that.
I didn't want to point that out, but yes.
So that's pretty ironic, though, that he took it, freaking Childeric being royalty and all.
Yeah.
But kind of cool he inspired that. Also in the tomb was a small golden bull's head, the king's signet ring, a Roman brooch that would have belonged to a high-standing Roman official. So that provides some solid evidence that Childeric actually acted as a high Roman official in some manner. He could have been like Magister Militum.
Or he stole
it. That we are unaware of. Or he stole it.
like, you know, got it from the...
Aegeus.
Yeah, got it from Aegeus.
Yeah, I could see that.
That was the ambush.
Unfortunately, though, this treasure was stolen from his grave from the French... Wow. That was horrible. Unfortunately, the treasure from this grave was stolen from the French Royal Library among 176 pounds of treasure. in 1831. Few pieces were covered, including two of the bees that were found in the, they were found in the Seine River.
What happened in 1831? Is it just some random group that stole it, or was there a major like war event?
I looked, it's not like during the French Revolution or anything, so.
Crazy. Because my first thought was like wartime looting.
That's immediately what I thought too, but I was like, no, that's not French Revolution. And if it is, I am so sorry, but I'm pretty confident it's not.
Crazy.
So yeah, because we can't have nice things, all of this treasure was lost. We only know about the treasure because of the detailed notes taken during the tomb's discovery.
Impressive. Still cool that we got to see that.
Yeah, it really is. So despite not knowing about his reign, he had one hell of a legacy. To sum up, he was the father to the wife of Theodoric the Great. He established the Salian Franks as a power player in Roman Gaul. He's the father of Clovis, who will go on to unite all the Franks under one banner and be like the true first king of France. He had a pretty cool treasure, even though it was lost. And he influenced Napoleon so much he adopted his heraldry after him.
For good.
That's solid. That's really good right there.
Yeah, it's kind of wild for how little we know about him.
I know, right? Kind of insane legacy he left.
Yeah, well, it sounds like that maybe Napoleon was just kind of idealizing too.
Probably was, but the fact that he inspired that is still good on him.
All right, well, with all that, I'm willing to give like, oh man, it's got to be really high, like a 9, right? Napoleon's a pretty big player.
That's what pushed me over the edge. Was like, I was thinking like 7 or 8, but no, with Napoleon, you gotta do 9. I mean, it's Napoleon. I'm not a big fan of him, unlike a lot of other people, and I'm sure that's gonna get me hate mail, but that's okay. So I'll go with 9 as well.
All right, so with a probably a generous 9, that makes for 18 for, you know, 9 from the both of us.
All right, Scott, what's the total?
All right.
Seems, I'm guessing, pretty good.
It's pretty decent. It's no, like, you know, early days quest for power, like Alaric grade stuff. At least not to my recollection.
Yeah.
But a 28 and a 27 for a total of 55. So
that's pretty solid.
Pretty good. How much we've ripped on people for the past so many months.
Yeah, so he's the new benchmark, because I think we should just rate, you know, compare kings against like their...
If you would like the reference, because I'm lazy and I keep a lot of things in the same location, if you'd like, you're actually quite comparable to Odoacer, oddly enough.
Oh, really? Interesting.
We gave Odoacer a little more. By 3 points. So,
I mean, he did dethrone Rome.
Yeah.
Or is credited with dethroning Rome.
Yeah.
That's gonna give you some. Well, so he is kind of as good as Odoacer, but should he be crowned as High King? Should he be a minor lord at court or burned at the stake?
Well, that's a tough one.
I don't think he needs to be burned. I think we can throw that one away.
Yeah. It's a tough contest because he's influential, but also, I'm going to say minor lord under the sense that his acts were really dubious or like just kind of unknown. If it were that fantastic, we probably would have heard
more. I was going to say the mythical aspect is what makes me want to give him High King, because he is a mythical king almost. But to me, High King means you have a lot of power. You are controlling multiple, you know, regions at once. You can push around your will, and I don't think he does that. I agree, minor lord at court.
Yeah. Next time.
Alrighty, so with that, we have another minor lord added to our court. That will bring us to the end of Childeric. Let us know what you thought of him. We would love to hear from you, the listener. You can catch us on Messenger at Facebook or Instagram at Quest for Power, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, you can find us on Patreon and join our I have questing party, but that is ridiculous. Join in our kingdom. Next episode, we're going to review the most famous Merovingian king, Clovis. He's another Alaric, Gaiseric, Theodoric the Great figure, so you're not going to want to miss that one. And with that, until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!